You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin with you at 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN, also on Twitter, at Chris Carlin, at C-H-R-I-S-C-A-R-L-I-N. We'll go Instagram live later as well during the show for a little bit. In addition, over on Instagram, it is That Guy Carlin. Tonight on the show, I cannot believe who I am going to be giving remarkable credit for doing all the right things. It's staggering. I saw the most depressing sports tweet of the entire pandemic earlier today, and we will get to that in just a little while. Very interesting comments today from Dan Orlovsky on the Michael Kay Show, coupled with ESPN's FPI projections that came out today regarding the NFL, the teams, the schedules they're going to face, and where they project for the season. We're going to tie that all up in a nice little knot, and it'll lead to a discussion regarding Daniel Jones. All of that lies ahead. Right now, Tony Clark and Scott Boras are getting their tails kicked by Major League Baseball, but they have the upper hand if they are smart enough to use it. Let's discuss what's going on. Folks, I don't want to get into a fake outrage bit between the players and the owners. We know what's going on here for baseball. The players have given up a significant amount of their money or lost a significant amount of their money because of not playing games this year. And they don't want to lose any more money. That's understandable. The owners don't have people coming to ball games if they even have ball games. So they don't want to pay as much as they were paying to the players, or they're scheduled to pay to the players, even if it is prorated. We understand that. But there is a situation right now that shows when you're Major League Baseball, it doesn't look like it, but they are really trying to take a little bit advantage of the situation. How? Here's how. Major League Baseball is trying to create a crack, trying to divide the Major League Baseball Players Association. With their latest proposal, you may have seen it earlier today, they proposed to the players that the players that have much higher salaries are going to be the ones that are going to take the hits. And the ones that are minimum salaries, you know, they won't quite get 100% of their prorated minimum salary, but not far off. They won't lose a whole lot of it. So, in essence, those guys, a large majority of the players, not large majority, but a large piece of the players' union will want to vote to play, will not want to lose any more money than they have, and the players who are making a ridiculous amount of money will be taking massive slices. How big of a slice? Well, here's one for you. I saw a projection today where Gerrit Cole, who was scheduled to make $36 million this year, will make roughly $9 million after all is said and done. Do we have sympathy for him? Of course we don't. But do we understand that if we were in his shoes, going from $36 million to $9 million is a kick in the pants? Yeah, we understand that. We really do. So you're going to have a situation where the guys who are making the most money are going to want to vote against this proposal, and the guys who are making the least money are going to want to vote for it. Does that sound familiar to you? It should, because it's exactly what happened with the National Football League. When they were making their new collective bargaining agreement just a few months ago, structured it as such, understanding that in their proposal, the players who were making the minimum amount, who make up so much of the NFL were not going to want to sit out a season and go on strike or get locked out because they couldn't afford to do it. If they're only making $500,000 or $600,000, now it still sounds like a ton of money, and it is, but there's a big difference between that and the players like, oh, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers, who was trying to get everybody to vote his way, making his $30 million a year. So this is right out of the NFL's playbook from Major League Baseball. And what they're trying to do here is force the Players Association into accepting this by acting as if we're taking care of the little guy, and you really need to be thinking more about them. You can afford the losses more than the little guy can. It's a brilliant ploy on the part of MLB. We all know everybody's losing money. But the big difference here is that was a few months ago. This is happening in the middle of a pandemic. Players are going to take the hit. They publicly are going to be the ones that will be criticized because they're the ones who are playing a game and making millions of dollars doing it. And if they don't want to agree on any kind of a financial adjustment to the current agreement, they're the ones who are going to look bad. And we know ultimately they're going to play. I mean, maybe there's some high-priced players like, I don't know, Blake Snell, who decide they're going to sit this one out. They might even end up looking worse if they do. Blake Snell today switched agents to Scott Boras. Did you see that? That happened. So you have player reps on every team. You have the MLBPA representing the 40-man rosters across the game. That's an important distinction. The 40-man rosters, meaning that the guy making the minimum amount, his vote counts the same as Gerrit Cole's does. And there are a lot more of those guys than there are of Gerrit Cole's. Maybe not quite as divided as it was in the NFL, but there's a lot of them. Scott Boras and Tony Clark can't keep their mouths shut, can't stop leaking information, trying to paint themselves in some sort of sympathetic light, and it's absolutely ridiculous for trying to even do that. They need to stop. We went through this last week. They need to stop. But folks, for the players, they can treat this not as getting the screw job, but if they were smart, they would treat this as an opportunity. The owners are trying to pigeonhole them and make them be the bad guys. Well, I would argue that if you're the players right now, and you're the higher priced players right now, and you agreed to a deal like this for the rest of this season, there would be a heck of a lot more goodwill bought by the players if we didn't go through any real true drama in the next week and a half just to get them back in the field. When you look around and see what the NBA is doing, and you see what the NHL is doing, and you see that football, you know, it looks like they're trying to be full steam ahead, even if it is without fans in the stands. If you're the MLBPA, why not do this? Agree to the deal. Take the less money this year for this 1 year and go out there and put together a donation, a significant donation, $10 million, $20 million, whatever, for COVID relief, but specifically toward the 40 million Americans who are unemployed right now as a result of this pandemic. You know, there's unemployment you can file for. I understand that. But there's a way to help those people, too. And there's been COVID relief. There's been our frontline workers. There's so many different people that you can help in this incredible nightmare that it's been. But if you do something to help the 40 million Americans who are unemployed right now, it takes away that notion of being tone deaf, doesn't it? If you're going to accept the deal, yeah, we'll take money less this year. We'll do what the owners need to do because, hey, we are all in this together ultimately. And I'll tell you where else we're all in it together. With the people who have lost their jobs. With the people who, our fans who are unemployed right now. And our, you know, friends who are not necessarily baseball fans who are unemployed. Let's go help them out. Because ultimately we get paid to play a game. And we understand that. You do all of that. You get so much goodwill heading into next year when the CBA is up at the end of next year. And you look like you've had the right tone and you look like you know what you're doing and you look like you care. You want to paint us in a bad light, owners? Okay, we're going to throw it right back in your face. We will get together, as unions are supposed to do. We will do the right things. And as the Players Association, here's what we're going to do. We're going to accept your deal. We're going to take a portion of our earnings this year, a significant portion, and we're going to put them toward COVID relief and the people who have lost their jobs. Because we believe in America, and we believe in our fans, and we believe in the people who have lost their jobs. And we understand how fortunate we are. How will all that play publicly? A hell of a lot better than whatever is going to happen over the next week and a half. Somebody's got to take the microphone away from Scott Boras and Tony Clark. I don't care if there's a coup inside the union. These guys can't be the ones who are talking. Because at the end of next year, if you have all that goodwill, guess who's going to look like the bad guy when it really matters for the long-term future of the game? 800-919-3776. We're going to get into it all tonight. Plenty of football. Le'Veon Bell's agent blew me off like a piece of lint today. We'll get into that if you want. A little behind the scenes right there. We will talk about Daniel Jones and why you may not want to just get those gold jackets for Canton ready quite yet. But we'll also get into who did something incredibly well today, and it's all there for you at 800-919-3776. It's open lines. It's your opportunity to get through. So let's do it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
It just, to me, it makes so much sense to take a bad situation and try to turn it into a good situation, turn it into an opportunity, turn it into a chance to help people win some goodwill when the players never, never get sympathy for some reason. And I know what the reason is. The owners always, always get the fan sentiment. For some reason, people choose to support billionaires over millionaires. And I think the reason is that they can attach a number and a salary to someone who gets paid in their eyes to play a game. They don't see everything that goes into doing that. They don't see all the behind-the-scenes work that it takes to make that happen. What they see is a guy go out on a field, play baseball for 9 innings. They don't understand what they have to do behind the scenes to get there. So by going and accepting this deal and putting together something that's going to really, really help unemployed Americans, COVID relief, however you want to position it, it will buy an awful lot of goodwill for next year. And maybe, just maybe, people will side with the players when they understand that the players do get their plight. That's where we've gone wrong here, right? Where you hear from players who talk about not wanting to play, who talk about the amount of money that they're going to lose and whether or not it's worth it. And while I get the mentality of it, when it comes to health, it doesn't get communicated well. And when that's the case, you've got major PR problems. You've got major PR problems. The players have never been able to get the owners, the fans behind them. This actually could. If you just stepped aside, didn't keep leaking out information as to how they're trying to screw you over, and actually watch the news for a couple of days and understand what's going on. And by the way, you're also helping your younger players, your veteran minimum players. You're taking care of the guys that ultimately are the backbone of the union. Yeah. There are big salary guys all over the place, but unions are formed to support the little guys more than anything, right? Isn't that the case? Don't you try to position it so that there's no person left behind? I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be the mentality of it. I'll tell you, it is a brilliant move on the part of the owners. And for players who think that they are trying to splinter the union and divide them, there's no question. That's exactly what Major League Baseball's owners and Rob Manfred are trying to do. They are absolutely trying to drive that wedge right in the middle between them. And then they hopefully continue to separate in between the haves and the have-nots. And when the have-nots are the bigger voting block, that's where you apply the pressure to them. And what happens? They're more needy. They're going to do whatever they need to do to get the food on their table faster. It's amazing. It's amazing to me that that continues to happen. That fans continue to support billionaires over millionaires. It's staggering. All right, we start things out tonight with our guy Spike in New Jersey. Spike, what's going on, bro?
Hey, good to get you. I just came off the golf course. I played 9 holes with my kid and my wife, and there's not a bone in my body that's not going to hurt tomorrow. I guarantee you that. Not a bone, man. I'm going to need 2 hip replacements, but I'll tell you.
Did you split your pants like Tom Brady?
That's what inspired it. I got to make one comment on that. Then I got a baseball comment for you. I said it on a couple of programs, and I know the radio business, and listeners come in and out. If Barkley didn't pull an Al Cervak and pull a Judge Schmelz on Brady, that thing would have been totally boring to me. When he yelled 50,000 if you get it on the green.
Yeah.
That's what I saw there. I was waiting for him to go, Wong, take a picture. You know? I mean,
no, I know.
There's nothing to that. I don't need to watch that.
No,
I find it interesting, except for him. Barkley's fun, man. He's a fun dude. He really is.
He is. I enjoyed. I will admit, I did not watch all of it. I probably watched about 5 or 6 holes, and yeah. I did enjoy it. I thought it was pretty good.
You enjoyed the fun that everybody was having.
Yeah, I just, you know.
I was waiting for
you know what Brady is?
A tree, you know, I
you
mean,
know what Brady is, listen. Spike, you know what Brady is? He's the guy
you want to be.
That when you go out to play golf, that you get paired up with, or he's your friend who, when he is playing poorly, He's the most miserable guy to play golf with.
Yeah, no, his life is what you would trade places. I wouldn't trade, and you wouldn't trade, but in reality, America would trade places, because he's got other problems, too. You can't be working out and eating that the ice cream he eats, whatever that green stuff is, the avocado ice cream, man. You got to indulge and dip a chip in something thick. You know, you got to get that feeling in your belly. But listen, I want to talk about baseball for a second, because the guy we picked up a fourth, and we were talking sports. You know me, I'm yapping all the way. I'm going. He goes, "What's the matter with the baseball players?" This guy was about your age, mid 40s, late 40s. He says to me, "Who do they got representing them? How did Tony Clark get the job back? For Christ's sakes, if baseball doesn't come back first and set an example, they're missing the boat here, Chris.
Spike, they're not dumb enough to not come back, and thanks for the call. They're going to put themselves back to play again. They're going to play again, okay? What they should avoid is the dumb drama and agita of the next week. That does not serve them in the least. What you have to do is put yourself in a position to where nobody's even angry at you when you're returning because of how it was handled. Can't do that. What I was saying about Brady is that he's the guy that if you play golf, you go out, and if you just go out with yourself, you get paired up with somebody. Brady's the guy that can't find the hole with a GPS for the first five holes, and he's miserable. And then he has like two good holes in a row. And then he starts talking your ear off, won't shut up, and then starts telling you what's wrong with your swing. I just want to go out and have fun. Like, I want to play golf with Charles Barkley. I don't want to play golf with Tom Brady. I have no interest because he looks like he has no fun. You know, Manning looked like he has fun. He was into it. Brady Tiger, how about a smile? A little humor. Oh, my God. And I know there were probably mic problems here and there, but there are times Brian Anderson's talking to him and Tiger's saying nothing. I mean, come on, Tiger. There may have been things where Tiger's earpiece was off, but Tiger and Brady it's not a lot of personality there. Just lighten up, fellas. Amanda Baleonis had to squeeze the purple feet prank that he had played on him when he was a rookie out of him. Eddie in Brooklyn is next. Eddie, what's going on?
How you doing? Good evening, good afternoon.
How are you?
I've been listening to you for a minute. I'm doing good. I had first of all, I'd like to tell you that I had COVID-19.
Are you completely through it?
I don't even know if I'm really completely through it, to be honest with you.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling better, but this time, like a lot of times, really, when I wake up in the morning, I got these little headaches. Mm-hmm. And they're not like where you got to go get a Tylenol or nothing, but they're just like annoying, like you have them. And then, you know, like my stomach's still kind of funny. Like even like right now I'm talking to you, my stomach's still kind of funny. But I'm a construction worker. I work at a local 46. I caught it on one of my jobs, on the job, right, and the end of March. But what I wanted to say to you is about, like, we talking about billionaires. These owners, they're like billionaires. And then you asking these guys. I understand, like, there's a lot of people out of work. Like right now I'm a regular working guy. I'm out of work. But I wouldn't be mad with the player if they said, no, I'm not going to go play because you don't want to pay me what I'm supposed to be getting. I understand there's a lot of people out here that's out of work. Like, I'm one of them. But at the same token, we are asking these players to go out here to put their lives on the line, even though it's not like what I do or like what nurses or doctors do. But we don't know how this thing attacks people. Nobody really knows. Like me, there was nothing wrong with me, and I caught this thing. You know, I don't have no high blood pressure, no heart problem or nothing. And I still caught this stuff, like, out of the blue. Like, in one day, I went home on Thursday and Friday, I couldn't get out of my bed, you know, from the stuff.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't know who's going to be affected by it and who's
not. Right, we don't know, you know what I'm saying? You got people out here thinking they're Superman, they can't get this. Yeah, you could get it. Trust me, anybody could get it. This thing could get anybody and everybody could get a piece of it. That's how I go. But players, to me, is like, as a player, you got to look, this is how I look at players, and I always look at ball players like this, whether it's basketball, baseball, or hockey, whatever sport. you only could play your sport for a certain amount of time to make all the money that you could make and to do all the stuff that you could do in the sport. Owners, they're around for like decades. So to ask players to take pay cuts and this like that, I'm not with it. I'm like, yo, pay these guys. You want them to go out there and take the risk, pay them what they worth and what they have signed for. I understand, like I said, there's people out of work, millions and millions of people out of work right now, but that's why we have a government for. Our government's supposed to take care of us because we put tax money into the government every year as working people.
No, and look, I mean, the amount of people who are on unemployment right now, understandably so. And
I understand that.
You know,
but that's why we have a government. Our government's supposed to take care of us so we can get back on our feet. I'm not talking about people abusing the system. I'm talking about legitimately people that can't go to work right now. Or whatever, you know, that's the purpose of us paying tax. That's the purpose of living supposedly in the greatest country in the world. So it's time for our country to stand behind us. You know,
Eddie, just for you right now, so now you have to wait until you are symptom-free for how long?
Actually, when I caught the COVID-19, it was, like I said, the end of March, and I've been in the house. I was in quarantine for like a whole month when I first caught it. I wouldn't go outside, nothing. I just like recently started coming outside and stuff like that. But when I called, I had went to Mount Sinai. That's how I found out I had it, you know. And when I called them like recently, like not too long ago, so like about 2 weeks ago, I called them like, asked them, I want to come back to get tested to see if I still have, see if I'm not COVID-19. They told me they're not, you don't come back to get tested. Basically, I just got to go when I feel like my body is right, go back to work or start doing certain things, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's no test for it to say, oh, you don't have it no more, basically. I guess that's what they're trying to tell me.
Right.
It's like
right.
You go home and quarantine yourself and do what you got to do, get yourself back to health. You know, since I didn't have to be in the hospital, and like when I feel like I could go back outside to do what I need to do or whatever, it's like you take a chance. Basically, that's what it boils down to. Like,
Eddie, man, hang in there. Hang in there, man. I mean, you know, listen, we're with you, and, you know, I honestly don't know what to say to you because it just has to be brutal across the board going through this for
Listen,
anybody that's had to deal with
that
it.
That stuff is no joke. Like in the first week, I probably lost 20 pounds. I didn't want to eat no food. I didn't want to see no food. Couldn't smell no food. Couldn't taste no food. I didn't have no part of it. You know, it's like this stuff takes you through a lot, and I wouldn't want nobody to go through it. People need to take this stuff real serious. Like this stuff, it ain't no joke. Like I said, I was never taking no pills. I never have been on no type of medication. I'm 59, but if you see me, you'd be like, no, ain't no way in the world you're 59 because I look a lot younger than 59, and my body's healthy. You know, I always take care of my body. I don't drink alcohol, nothing like that, but I still caught this stuff.
So Eddie, honestly, man, hang in there. We are with you. Appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in, and just keep fighting the good fight, man. And I'm with you 100%. It's aggravating when people are not doing the right things. They continue to not understand what it's about. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. It's Carlin with you. We're discussing how the players, if they were just smart enough to do it and stop talking about the money from their side. Even though they're not at fault here, they can't win. If you do this, you kind of can. If you decide we're going to take what the owner's proposal is because the most important thing is to be playing baseball, our guys who aren't comfortable with it, they're not going to do it, and we're fine with that. And we're going to put together a significant donation for COVID relief and for the millions upon millions of Americans who have lost their jobs. Because they're the people that we're thinking right now about. All of our frontline workers and all who have been affected by this. It would buy so much goodwill for the players. It would be amazing.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Holy crap! Make sure we're taping the show. Gary Bettman got it right. That's not something I say very often. I've been down on him a lot the last couple of years, especially around how all of the concussion things were handled or not handled by the NHL over the last few years. However, today, with the NHL coming out with their plan to play, granted, not with a date yet, and that's just smart, but their plan is an excellent, excellent plan. In case you haven't heard it, this is what we're looking at, okay? 24 teams in the playoffs. No more regular season. You will have 16 teams play 8 series in a qualifying round. You will have 8 teams, 4 in each conference, play the top 4 in each conference, I should say, play a round robin to determine seeding. All of this will happen in 2 hub cities, one for the Eastern Conference, one for the West. Now, there's a bunch of different cities that are up for it that could potentially be it, Edmonton and Chicago and Tampa. There's a bunch of places where it could be. But the cities are going to be determined by the COVID conditions, the testing availability, and by the local government and such. And teams can travel with a party of 50 people maximum. So, you know, there's 20-some-odd players. You're going to bring some extra players as well. And then staff, broadcasters, all that. That's what you're dealing with. But listen to this. I love this. I love this. Listen to this. In the qualifying round, you have 8 teams. The bottom 8 in each conference, they have 7 that didn't make the playoffs out of the 31. So then you have the top 4 playing in the round robin for seeding. Then the next 8 square off in a qualifying round best of 5. So it would go like this in the East. The Rangers would play Carolina. The Islanders would play Florida. Toronto plays Columbus. Pittsburgh plays Montreal. Best of 5. Out West, Edmonton and Chicago. Nashville, Arizona. Vancouver, Minnesota. Calgary and Winnipeg. And then you have the teams that are playing for seeding, the top 4 in each conference. In the East, it's Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Philly. In the West, it's St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas. Now, you could be a skeptic and argue, well, they wanted to get the Rangers. They wanted to make sure they had the big city. They wanted to make sure they had Chicago. They wanted to make sure that, you know, Toronto and all these teams are going to be a part of what's going on. Well, of course, that could be part of it, too. But this is what we're talking about. This is a brilliant idea. I like the way it's played out. I like the way that you have structured this. It's perfect. It's perfect. Why? Because you get the majority of your teams involved, and the ones that feel like they might have gotten screwed over by not playing the rest of the regular season really can't make that argument now. 7 teams that are not making the postseason and not going to play didn't deserve to be there anyway. So anything that they would have done in coming back only would have harmed somebody else that might have been more deserving but could get knocked out in a best 3 of 5. So now you've got teams that are in it that get their shot who may not have if you had just ended the season and were taking the top 16 teams and just calling it a day. In other words, top 8 in the East, top 8 in the West, boom, this is what we're doing. And if you weren't in there after 60-some-odd games, 65 games, you're screwed. Sorry. Can't help you. No. This is, or 70-some games, I should say. This is perfect. I love the idea of the qualifying round. I love the idea of the qualifying round. I love the idea of having 16 teams playing eight series and a second and a seeding round robin, four teams in each conference, works for me. You know, you make sure that you got to remember that there are some opportunities here for teams that may not have gotten it. You know, for the Rangers, as the great incarcerated Bob just pointed out to me on Twitter, the Rangers swept the Hurricanes this year, and the Islanders swept the Panthers in their matchup. So you got to love that already. I tell you what, I can't get enough of this. I can't get enough of these leagues coming up with inventive, creative ideas in a season that has been marred by this pandemic. It's crushed us. It has. So why not take chances? Why not roll the dice and do some things that maybe you wouldn't have necessarily done before? I think it's great. I got to tell you, all right, look. Am I the biggest hockey fan in the world? I'm not. I enjoy watching it in the playoffs, like everybody else talking about. Nothing better than playoff hockey, all that stuff. There is. I enjoy watching it in the postseason. I will absolutely watch it right now. And the best part about this is Bettman is not putting undue expectations on anyone or anything. He's not putting a timeline on it. He's saying we are fully prepared to play late into the summer and into the fall, and we'll figure out beyond that. But we're not going to rush this. We're not going to rush to get into training camp. He laid out the three different phases. I loved how it all came around. Loved it. I just think that if you're Gary Bettman, you could not have done better than you did here. I'm really high on it. And I can't tell you the last time I looked at something that Gary Bettman did and said, yes, you got it. It's not often that happens. And it's nothing against him. I don't think he's great at this. I just don't. I think sometimes when you have situations like this that pop up, you have to be as creative as possible. Again, treating this instead of poor us and what are we ever going to do and just being hurt and sitting around and ticked off at the world, treating it as an opportunity. That's what the NHL is doing here. They're treating this as an opportunity and they're being responsible about it. Here's Bettman explaining the format with the 24 teams.
When the given go-ahead from the medical experts and the relevant government authorities is given, 24 of our 31 teams will resume play. The top 12 in each conference as ranked by percentage points from our standings as they stood through the games of March 11th when we paused our season as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The remaining seven teams will enter the draft lottery.
I don't care. He went into the draft lottery stuff, and I got confused very quickly. You know, those seven are into the draft lottery, and then trying to explain that is like, no, I don't do math. No. I'm sorry. I took calculus. I'm done. I don't care about the lottery that much. But I do care about this, and I like the way it's structured.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
That's what we have come to. Should the Knicks bring Taj Gibson back next year? Oh, my God. Why are we asking questions like that when all we have to do is, you know, just keep trying to find some way to get sports back? And we're asking, like, the question on the top of everybody's head, what is Taj Gibson's future? My Lord. 800-919-3776. John in New Jersey, up next on 98.7 ESPN. John, what's up, bud?
Nothing much, man. I hope everything's well with you and your family, and that everybody's safe during this crazy time, man.
You too. You too, brother.
Hey, listen, I heard you mentioning Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones, and this is my question to put out there. I think Daniel Jones has a better supporting cast. So his rookie year, of course, was better than Sam Darnold. He had Saquon Barkley, you know, Ingram. His wide receivers were way better than Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold and the Jets had one of the worst O-lines in football. His rookie year, he had no running game. And you can argue and you can make a point that Sam Darnold's best weapon his whole career has been Jamison Crowder. And not saying that Crowder isn't a good player, but if he's your main target, you're not going to win too many games. You know what I'm saying? Then you have Le'Veon Bell who can't get going because there's no offensive line. And we all know that a quarterback's best friend is a solid running game. So I think Joe Douglas is trying to get it right. And yeah, he has so far. Let's see how these picks pan out. You know, he fixed the O-line, which I'm totally happy about. But I still think we could use maybe one more big play wide receiver or maybe get some more pieces for Sam. But to say maybe Daniel Jones will be better, I think it's a little too early to jump to that.
It may be, but I mean, if you had to ask me to lean one way or another, I mean, that's the way I would lean. Because when I look at Darnold and his 2 years, and I get it, I know what was around him and what wasn't, but Jones in year one, there were a lot of good things to see. You know,
there were great things to see. Like, I watch both teams. I'm a Jet fan, but I also watch the Giants as well because they're always on. But yes, I agree with you that there were some plays that I was like, wow. But then you listen to a guy like Dan Orlovsky on ESPN, and I think he was a little far-fetched in saying he would prefer Darnold over Lamar Jackson. But I think what he was getting to say is just the raw talent that Sam Darnold has, he can potentially be one of the top quarterbacks in this league down the line.
Yeah, look, I think that he can be, but I look at the issue, John, and thanks for the call, of Darnold and the interceptions, the 2 years, trying to make too much happen. Okay, that's a problem. That's a problem. But I want to look at what the things that Jones did in year one. And while Orlovsky still sees some things that are troubling, they were things that were very correctable. Very correctable. So if that's the case, why not feel better about what you saw from a guy that threw 24 touchdowns and only 12 picks? I know about the fumbles. Fumbles got better later in the year. The fumbles got better later in the year. And that's not something I think is really going to be a big problem in the future. I really don't. And the guy did get sacked 38 times. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Open lines for you to fire away. Now, I'm talking about earlier about the players versus the owners in the baseball conflict at the moment. And my general take is this. The players can't win, and it's unfortunate because no matter what happens, the public is going to look at them and say, you get paid to play a game. You get paid millions of dollars to play a game. So you're never going to get the benefit of the doubt there. Fans can assign a number as a salary to a player. And that's where you have to understand that it's a little bit unfair because while the owners may be billionaires, you don't know exactly how much money they're making. You don't know who's making money and who's losing money. And so where there is that level of just, you know, the unknown, it leads the fan to side with the owner more. Here's all you need to know about the owners, okay? Check this one out. Jeff Passan from earlier tonight, who hopefully we'll have on the show this week. The Oakland A's informed minor league players today that they would not continue paying them the $400 per week after the end of the month. Sources familiar with the situation told ESPN. So that's basically at the end of this coming week, at the end of May. Other decisions from organizations should arrive in the coming days. That is not a good sign, as Jeff points out. So he does some rough math on the situation. Say there are 200 players in a minor league system, paying each player $400 per week for June, July, and August is $5,200 per player. To pay every minor leaguer the rest of the year, it would have cost the A's a hair over $1 million. Owner John Fisher is worth an estimated $2 billion. Wow. Now, we know the A's have never been a winning proposition financially, okay? But let me go back to this. You have the proposal that the owners sent to the players today. And that proposal, in essence, says that the higher salaried players are going to take the big hit and the low salary and a minimum salary guys are not going to take very much of a hit at all. Now, this was absolutely not just designed to save the bigger money, but also designed to splinter the union a little bit. Don't think for a second that the owners are not taking advantage of this pandemic to set themselves up for next year. They know the players are always going to be the ones that are going to look bad publicly. So they did this with the idea that those lower salaried players, those guys who are making the minimum, those guys who are trying to hang on to their major league careers, are now going to vote in favor of taking that deal and moving forward. Why? Because they can't afford to lose that money. They can't afford to lose that money. Meanwhile, we know that Gerrit Cole certainly can. Now, the slice that Gerrit Cole is going to be taking is going to go from $36 million or $35 million at the beginning of the year all the way down to about $7.8 million for the second half of the season, for 80-some games. Now, that is a hell of a shave. I think we can all agree. But is any one of us feeling bad for him? No, we're not. We're absolutely not feeling bad for him. This is happening in the middle of a pandemic. What the owners did here was exactly what the football owners did to the Players Association a few months ago. Set up their proposal so that it would favor the lesser paid player, thus attempting to splinter the union and railroad their deal through. And that's what they did. If you remember, it was like a 51-49 vote. It was a very close vote in percentages. But I talked to several of those lower end salary guys who could not afford to miss an entire season if they were going to get locked out or if they were going to strike. So when that's the case, and that's how your league is primarily comprised, they're going to vote in that direction, and that's what happened. They don't care that Aaron Rodgers wanted them to vote the other way. They don't care. They got to pay and feed their family, and I know we say that, and they're making $500,000 a year, but like after taxes and all that stuff, it's still a great salary. You're not set for life if you're making the NFL minimum for 4 years. You're just not. And that's the average length of the salary or of the career. So they lose. This is exactly how the baseball owners have set this up moving forward. So for the rest of this year, those guys on the higher end are going to take that big trim in payroll. And some of them may decide to just sit out. And that the owners will feel great. I don't have to pay them at all then. You know, they may not have their best player out there, but they'll deal with it for half a season. They won't get them hurt in a half season. You know, that's just how they will look at it. Remember this. The Players Association represents everybody on the 40-man roster. So there are plenty of those lower-salaried guys that they're representing that could splinter off. Scott Boras and Tony Clark have been the ones that have been out front, and somebody's got to take the microphone away from them. Because every time they open their mouths, it absolutely ends up just making them look worse. The Players have an opportunity here to win this PR battle going into a year when there is a true CBA negotiation at the end of the season. They have that opportunity. How? Here's how. And I'm not advocating for the owners here. I'm advocating for the players. Take the deal. Take the deal that the owners are offering and suck it up for this 1 year. Your lower end guys get their money. They get to play baseball for their salary, for that half salary, whatever the prorated number was, and they don't take much more of a shave. It's the guys who were much more higher paid doing the right thing for a short period of time. But even though they are taking all the risk, they're still not going to be looked at that way by the fans. They're still going to be looked at as a group of guys playing a game for money. So here's what you do. You quietly take the deal. All right, guys, done. And then you go out front if you're the Players Association. You take a good amount of money collected from your group and you designate it for COVID relief causes, but specifically maybe to go toward the 40 million Americans who are out of jobs. And just come out and say, look, we know we play a game for money and we know how fortunate our lives are. So we're willing, you know, we're more than happy to take this hit this year for the greater good. And here's how we're going to help. Do you think America would respond to that? Do you think baseball fans would respond to players differently next year when the CBA comes up and people are screaming and yelling about no baseball? I think they would. So you might be saying, Carlin, why would I possibly not only tell the players to take that deal, but then give up more and you know, donate that money when the owners, you know, they have all the money that they do? You know what? It's not about them. They're trying to screw you over right now. So just fire back. It would be such a brilliant move on their part to show that they care first and foremost about the fans. Because right now, every time they open up their mouths, they look dumber and they look less in touch. This is why Tony Clark and Scott Boras are way too focused on this season and how this all goes is going to affect next year's negotiations for the new CBA. If the players get that kind of public sentiment on their side, boy, that would go a long, long way with the fans. And then all of a sudden, maybe the owners aren't always getting the benefit of the doubt against the players. An expensive fix? Yes. But a fix that's worth it. Showing people that you care in the middle of a pandemic and in the process, turning what is a less than ideal situation into an opportunity. That's what this all has to be about. We have to stop, if you're the players, looking at it like, oh, you know, we got screwed on this whole deal for this year, and you have to turn it around and flip it on them. That's what you have to do. Because make no mistake, they're trying to screw you over right now in the middle of this pandemic. They are. Flip it on them. Just flip it. And all of a sudden, you'll start looking better.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Give it up in the background a little bit, because I'm not hating it. Ty.
Lay it on me, brother.
Isn't it alarming when you see just... I'll just be blunt. You know, overweight, late 40s white guys singing to this, isn't it? I mean, that's just a... I look at myself and I would get disgusted by that.
Why is that? I think we can be appreciative of good music.
No, you can be appreciative of good music, but me personally, like, trying to look cool by singing it, like, I can't possibly be cool.
No, I'm impressed by it, which is why, and we've seen in the past couple of weeks where I play a song and you're rapping to it or you're, you know, humming the lyrics or the words. That actually flatters me. Well, because okay. It makes me feel like I'm doing my job, like a
well,
part of this.
Well, you are doing your job. You're picking great music. But I, like, it's the thing that I always say to people when I hear them singing, when I hear other people singing. You know why they sang that? So you didn't have to. So that's why, like, I sit here, we're playing great music coming back, and I just, I feel like if I start singing it, I'm, like, ruining it.
So what if you're back in studio and you see me humming Lynyrd Skynyrd or, you know, reciting any of those
lyrics?
No,
I don't mean it like that. I just mean it like, because I should really just make it, it's more about me just being uncool than anything else.
I disagree. I think you're
late
pretty
40s
cool.
Bald, uncool guy.
I think you're pretty cool. I actually saw you on Instagram the other day. You were sipping some wine. I gave you a shout out. I think you're a cool dude. I wouldn't comment on your pictures or on your stories if I didn't think you were cool.
Well, I appreciate that, Ty. That wine was a screw top. $9. That was good stuff.
I would not play this music for you if I didn't think it fit the show.
Now I want to leave early and go have some gin and juice. Oh, God. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Dan in Jersey up next. Dan, what's up, dude?
How's it going? Lifelong Jets fan, and I just wanted to get your take. I've been heard a lot of conversation around, you know, Jamal Adams. Obviously, he's a great player and the contract situation. And then you were talking about Sam Darnold before, and it just kind of clicked for me. Do you think that Darnold's play dictates whether the Jets give Adams an extension or whether if they decide to move on from Darnold and blow it up, they turn around and use him as an asset to bring in more pieces to jumpstart that rebuild?
I think that's very possible. I think you make an excellent point with how that could go. I don't expect it to happen. I do think that they truly want him to be a Jet for life. I do believe that. But I think at this point, they almost feel like it's more important to know where they're headed quarterback-wise before they pay him. You know what I mean? It's to your point. It's, all right, if Darnold is going to have a big year and we're going to pay him after year three, then we need to figure out if we can pay Jamal, and if we can't, then we would trade him. But it is, from that standpoint, more important to understand what your quarterback situation is than paying a safety that kind of money.
Awesome. I appreciate the insight.
Yeah, no problem. You make a great point there, Dan. Great point. Because think about it, right? So Jamal Adams is after year three, and he wants to get paid right now, and we all completely understand him wanting to get paid right now. Because in the NFL, you have to get it as soon as you can. And you have to get as much of it as you can because it's not guaranteed. But what's the more important position? Obviously, quarterback. You're stuck with the C.J. Mosley contract, which you could get out next year, but you're only saving $5 million and you have $12 million debt against the cap. You are talking about paying a position that is not one where you dedicate a lot of your resources to anymore. It's much more important to know if you have the quarterback. So look at it this way. Would the Jets be more likely to pay Jamal Adams after this coming season if Darnold has a bad year? That actually may be true. If Darnold has a great year, Jamal may be playing elsewhere next year. I think that's the tricky part of this whole thing. I got to write that down. How did I? I mean, he pointed it out, but geez, that's a good thought for the show tomorrow or something. You know, Darnold, Adams tied together. That's not bad. That's not bad. All right, Mike in Plainville. Mike, what's up?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Just jotting down show ideas, Mike.
All right, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a little preparation. So I'd like to respectfully disagree when it comes to your idea about the MLB players, and obviously this season as well as going forward. To ask players to take a cut and still make millions, to me, is no different than asking the average Joe who's making $50K a year to take a 20% cut. But it comes off silly because of how much the players do make. With revenue down, it's not unheard of to have to take a pay cut. So if you're going from $35 million down to $7 million, yeah, it's a huge cut, but you know what? I feel worse for the guy who's making a much lesser salary being asked to take even the same amount of a pay cut as
well, but that's the thing. Those guys, all right, look, the minimum salary guy, okay, they're not taking very much of a cut at all. They would not be. It's a very minimal shave, and so that's how the owners are trying to divide the players. Those guys who are the rank-and-file players in the league are going to vote for playing and getting paid and getting out there and trying to do the right thing by their families. Meanwhile, the guys who are making the big money are taking the bigger shave, and that creates a little bit of a divide in the union.
Right, which I hear, but again, it's basic economics. It makes sense. And what drives me crazy is when you hear the players talk about their safety. I run a nursing home. I don't want to hear about player safety because you know what? At the end of the day, they have more medical care and personal attention than anyone else on the planet because of how valuable they are. So they'd be put in a position where obviously things could always go wrong. We obviously have a lot of things that still need to be answered with what's going on. But come on, the personal attention, the care they get, I don't want to hear that they're unsafe because there are a lot of other people who are a lot unsafer than they are. And my last point, if you don't mind, when it comes to the CBA and the voting, I know you mentioned that the players should come together and, you know, put some kind of a foundation or whatever together to give money to those who are unemployed or something similar. The problem is the CBA isn't a student council election. The fans might feel good about what they're doing if they come up with some stimulus plan, but at the end of the day, it always has been and it always will be about money for both the players and the owners. I don't see the owners turning around next year and you know, saying, oh, guys, you know, we really appreciate what you did. We see the fans, how they reacted to it. So we're going to start negotiating and you'll have the leverage. I just don't see that happening. I know there are a lot of things that are up in the air and I know everyone's coming up with different ideas. That's my take. I don't have a suggestion. I just wanted to talk about your point, Chris. Thanks for everything, man.
No, I appreciate the call. Thanks, Mike, for checking in. I get where you're coming from. I just personally would look at it and say, and you know, if I'm a player, how can we get around this? How can we do something for the greater good that also will help us in the long run? And I think that would help them in the long run. I really do. It's unconventional. A little bit more expensive. But next year, boy, the fans would be in your corner. And that's something that has not happened in a long, long time when it comes to labor negotiations.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.